Every year, some 30,000 people come to Canada to apply for refugee status. Less than half are eventually accepted. Seeking refuge takes us into the lives of five people who are trying to gain refugee status in Canada. From an Algerian man who has lived in a church basement for 2.5 years to a woman trying to establish the truth of her identity as a person from the Congo, the film offers a compelling glimpse into the suffering they face. The film also examines a system that is failing to provide timely and just decisions for genuine refugees facing danger in their countries of origin. Karen Cho is the director of Seeking Refuge, which shows at the Doxa Festival on Monday, and she joins me in the studio this morning. Hello, Karen.
Hi.
Now, the film looks at the personal stories of five people as they go through the process of trying to be accepted as refugees in Canada. How long did you follow those people in making the film?
Well, it varied. The actual research for the film was quite difficult. I mean, these are people fleeing violent, kind of life-threatening situations, and it's really hard to find people who are willing to show their faces on camera without being blurred. So the research for the film started in 2006, and some of the characters who are still in the film, we actually, you know, I've been doing research shooting with them since 2006. But the film itself, we followed all of them for over a course of a year. But when we began the process, you know, we thought we'd get someone at the border and then follow them through the process. But the thing is, it takes so long for the process to happen that we were actually towards the end looking for refugees who had already been here for at least a year or two, because then we knew that we would at least get the hearing process, you know, on film while we were following them over a year.
I think that's something that came across very strongly in the film, was the idea that people's lives are in, I mean, I wouldn't even call it limbo, because there's a lot going on, a lot of stress and a lot of suffering for people as they're going through this process. But it seemed like such a long process, and every time they would go through another hurdle in the process or another step and be delayed, it would be, you know, the process would be really lengthened for people. What are the kinds of times that people typically spend trying to get their refugee claim status approved?
Well, I mean, there's this whole issue of the backlog, right? The idea of the process taking too long. Normally, it's supposed to take between 6 months and a year, which is reasonable because, you know, the IRB, or the Immigration Refugee Board, they require a lot of documentation from the refugees. And when you're fleeing your country, or, you know, you don't have time to take all your 10 IDs and your birth certificate and your, you know, high school diploma or whatnot. So it takes time for them to try to trace back all these documents. So, you know, 6 months to a year is good, but now we've reached to a stage where it's become, you know, 2-3, and then sometimes if you're at the back end of the system, if you've been rejected, you know, it can be upwards of 8-10 years. I've even met people who've been 17 years here in limbo. The problem is the government, very often, I mean, the immigration system is kind of used as this political, you know, pawn in a way, and very often, for instance, the backlog in the system was at the lowest it had ever been when the Harper government came into power in 2006. But since then, a lot of the refugee board members, these are the people that make the decisions, you know, their contracts were up and their political appointees, but no new ones were being appointed, and the ones whose contracts were up weren't being replaced. So the government, in a way, a lot of people felt, were deliberately not naming new members to the board, and the backlog actually doubled. Between 2006, 2008, it went up from like 20,000 cases up to over 40,000. And then the government turns around and says, well, the system doesn't work because there's such a backlog, but they've actually created the backlog. So a lot of the dialogue around, you know, how the waiting process, it's also sometimes it's created so they have, it, as one person in the film puts it, a stick to beat the system with, right? This whole idea of, oh, it takes too long. But for sure, for the people stuck in that system, the wait, the feeling of limbo, I mean, you don't know if you're safe until you are declared a real refugee. You're an asylum seeker until then. And, you know, if you are escaping some, you know, a terrible torture, violence, rape, and to think that you might be sent back to that situation, it's completely traumatizing for people. And to have to be in a kind of limbo where you don't know what's going to happen for several years, it's just totally detrimental to, you know, psychologically, but also they can't get on with their lives here in Canada, even though they're here for 2-3 years. You know, maybe they work, but they're separated from their family. You know, they just can't integrate in a real way.
What kind of psychological issues did you find that people were experiencing as they went through this process?
Well, there was a lot of post-traumatic stress syndrome. I mean, various women in the film, or women in my film, they had been raped, or they'd had, you know, they were victims of sexual violence. And the problem is, when you get into one of these refugee hearings, you know, they ask you a ton of questions, right? About, you have to recount the story. So in a sense, you're like pulling up all these memories that you've suppressed, you know, and very often people with post-traumatic stress syndrome, they're the ones most likely to contradict themselves, you know, and then it becomes this idea of, well, are they telling the truth? Aren't they telling the truth? I mean, the hearing itself is quite complicated. Very often the refugee doesn't speak the same language as the board member, so there's an interpretation going on. There's psychologist reports. I mean, it's quite a complicated thing to kind of find the truth in all of that, you know. I mean, it's a very human system, but at the same time, there's a lot of chance for human error.
Now, some of the immigration lawyers talk about that policy, where they said it was actually a policy where the immigration and refugee board were actually looking for the weak parts in a person's story.
Mm-hmm. There's been this trend since 2002 called reverse order questioning, which is essentially, what used to happen was a refugee would come into the hearing and they would present their story. They would say, you know, the details of what happened, why they have a well-founded fear. But now, you know, because of this idea of the backlog or trying to save time, it's like we skip that part and then we go directly to the board member, ask all the questions. And the board member is always asking, you know, if there's a contradiction in the story, or, you know, there, it's like you're entering into an interrogation. And for people who come from, maybe they come from a country where it's a military dictatorship or something, and then they go, imagine going to this big room that looks like a hearing room in Canada, and then some person starts asking you about, you know, why don't you have a doctor's report because you were raped, you know. It's really traumatizing for the refugees. I mean, a lot of lawyers feel that it would be just better that if they could tell their story and then there could be some follow-up questions for clarification, instead of this head-on, you know, okay, these are all the contradictions, clarify yourself, you know.
Wow. Now, there was a story in the film about a refugee from Honduras who was killed after being refused entry into Canada. How did the safe third party agreement with the U.S. figure into that tragic situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, right now we have a safe third country agreement, which is an agreement we've made with the United States, where any refugee who goes through the United States has to apply for refugee status there instead of coming to Canada, because the United States is considered a safe country. The problem is, for everyone, I mean, for various people, but people from the South American continent, they, you know, how do you get to Canada? You have to go through the United States. So there was a woman in our film, Esli, and her common law husband from Honduras. They passed the United States to come to the Canadian border. She was allowed in here in Canada because she had a sister here, and that's one of the loopholes. If you have family here, you're allowed in. But her and her husband couldn't prove that they were common law, that they'd been together for more than 12 months. So at the border, there was a decision was taken to deport him back to the United States. And then the United States, obviously, you know, they didn't recognize he was a refugee, and very often they don't for people from Latin countries. So he was deported back to Honduras. And as a result, 1 month later, the same gangs that they were fleeing kidnapped and murdered him. And I mean, and it's a direct result of the Safe Third Country Agreement, which, you know, people are up in arms about this. The Amnesty International, United Nations, and various NGOs and, you know, immigrant and refugee organizations here in Canada have said it's a terrible policy. And I mean, and this kind of thing does happen. You know, people are sent back to torture because the United States won't recognize that they are refugees.
How has the IRB itself changed in the last decade? How has that body, which adjudicates the you know, really decides about the lives of these legitimate refugees who are fleeing these countries and tries to separate them from people who are making false refugee claims or ones that don't meet the standard that Canada allows refugees in?
Well, I think as of late, I mean, there's that we're in the kind of security type atmosphere, and it's really an atmosphere of suspicion. You know, but I mean, a lot of people think that it comes from, you know, 9/11 after September 11th, you know, this idea of closing off the borders. But a lot of the people that we've been talking to in the system say it actually comes from before that, you know, the end of the Cold War, where the refugees who were arriving here, you know, after the fall of the Berlin Wall, they were no longer, you know, the white kind of European type refugees. Now we have, you know, we have the, God forbid, the people from the Congo, you know, the refugees that they're looking different. So a lot of people feel that there's that tendency now to be more paranoid about, I mean, especially people from the Congo, their identity, you know, their documents are never believed. And I'm not sure why they have samples of legitimate documents. It should be quite clear what's a legitimate document or not. But for some reason, anyone from the Congo, it's like a question, you know, it's constantly questioned their identity. So the board as of late, I mean, I think, I mean, I don't want to totally bash the system, because the Canadian refugee system is one of the strongest in the world. And we do have one of the largest definitions of what is a refugee and who can qualify to be a refugee. But at the same time, you know, there's problems. We've got such a backlog in the system. They're not naming people to the refugee board. You know, for instance, there used to be two board members who would judge these cases. And in the case of a split decision, the refugee would get the benefit of the doubt. But in 2002, they changed it. So now there's only one board member who judges these cases. And if it's a negative decision, and there's no chance of appeal. Right now in the refugee system, a refugee cannot appeal a negative decision. There's very little recourse. I mean, you have something like a 1% or 2% chance. For refugees, these kind of things mean life and death. And we kind of try to go into that in the film, you know, like the policies or the decisions that we make to either save time or to try to, you know, not give people a chance of an appeal. For a refugee, that could mean that they're sent back to torture. So I think the fact that there's no refugee appeal right now, even though in the legislation, the government, when they, you know, took it from two board members to one, said that they would implement a refugee appeal division. It hasn't happened. The Liberal government didn't do it. This government's not doing it. And in the meantime, you know, people are getting sent back to very dangerous situations.
So you've got a situation, it's a very human, complex situation. There are complex stories, there are complex documents and kind of a country background that needs to be sorted through, and it basically falls on the shoulders of one person to make that decision, and there's no appeal.
No appeal. I mean, there's three stages after that. You can apply for a judicial review, which basically means if there was an error in the kind of legal proceedings of your hearing, you could try to get a new hearing, but it's a total new hearing. After that, you can apply for a pre-removal risk assessment, which essentially means between the time of your hearing and now, what is there any further risk that have had it happen in the country? I mean, the rate of success of that is 2%. So, I mean, essentially zero. And then after that, you can try to apply for a humanitarian and compassionate appeal, which is not part of the refugee system. Immigrants can apply for that. Anyone can apply for that. It's essentially on humanitarian compassionate reasons, you ask to have permanent residence in Canada.
How many of the cases were resolved by the time you finished the film?
By the time we finished the film, of the five refugees, three cases were resolved. I don't want to give too much away, because one has been resolved since then, but one right now is remaining, and that's the case of Abdelkader Belaouni, who's the blind Algerian man living in church sanctuary in Point St. Charles in Montreal. He's been there for over 3 years now. You know, they've done various agreements with various levels of government to try to rectify a situation and get him status here in Canada, but Jason Kenney, who is the last person that can decide on this case, the immigration minister, he's refused to look into Kader's case.
What do you hope to leave audiences with when they see this film?
Well, I hope audiences, you know, they kind of, because it's from the point of view of the refugees, Canadian audiences can see how it feels to be a refugee here. One thing that struck me while doing the film is refugees, they're not immigrants. You know, they didn't choose to come here. They were fleeing their family, their livelihoods, the lives that they had in their countries to come here. And then often when they arrive here, they're treated with suspicion, and that, you know, we're assuming that they're going to cheat our system, take advantage of our social services, which is not the case at all. You know, these people had lives where they were, and they're fleeing for very real reasons. And you know, the refugee experience can be a very isolating one, and I think we have to really be wary of the way that we treat people who are in genuine need of our protection.
Well, I appreciate your making the film and joining me here this morning, and we'll tell people how they can see it.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Karen Cho. She's the director of Seeking Refuge, which plays at the Doxa Film Festival. It's on Monday at 6 p.m. at Pacific Cinematheque, and Karen will be at the theater that evening for this screening.